When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the ever-expanding Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earl. Robbie, to quote my friend Michael Scott, it's happening. Everyone stay calm. It's happening. Cry Man Squaw FNC double time, okay? Cry Man Squaw Oscar. For those of you who don't watch The Office, Crisis Management Squad front and center, twice as fast as you would normally do it, to which Jim then responds, couldn't you argue this is taking more time to explain it to us than just saying that? But that's how hyped I am right now, okay? Stay calm.
I wish that I could feel this way after every MCU episode or movie that I watch, because this is exactly how I want the MCU to make me feel, Kyle. This is it. This is top tier, baby.
Oh, whoa. Okay, we'll get into that a little bit later.
I'm coming for you, man.
I already decided it's not fair to rank it today, so everyone put down your pitchforks, put down your knives, because every other thing we've ever done, we've had some time to at least process and come back to. So let's save that for a little bit later. I'm going to keep a lot of the bests and worsts and biggest and mosts out of this conversation, like it's a therapy session they tell us to do, but I cannot wait to talk about it. Robbie, are you kidding me? And just not time for small talk. So stop wasting my time. There's no time for small talk. And so Robbie, what's new in the MCU?
Everything, Kyle. Everything.
It's almost like you had that planned. We have to be getting a Spider-Man trailer, I think, ASAP.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that that's been predicted. And at the end of the episode, I'm really excited to talk about where this leads us in general. But in all seriousness, this show, like we sort of predicted back at the beginning, is setting new things up in a way that nothing has in a long time.
Before we dive into the actual film, I need to say a couple of things. I'm just going to toot the Friends from Work horn here for a second. We're going to ring our Kang bells. We're going to ring our Friends from Work bells. Here's what I got to say. We were right about a lot of stuff, dude. Okay, hold on. I just got to go on the record and say, when I forced both of us on the record last week, we predicted that Kang would be there.
We got into some
Twitter arguments with people who were like, oh, that wouldn't work and that'd be bad storytelling. And we were like, well, I think it could happen and here's why. And we had logical reasons on why that would be. Yep. And we were right. Secondly, how crazy on the nose was I when I went into that thing last week when I said, or a couple weeks ago when I said, it's starting to feel like the Cloverfield thing where maybe everything is going to happen. And I basically verbatim said, I think it's probably going to be a case where the TVA is crazy and they are liars and they are doing some things inappropriately, but I think there is going to be somebody actually spending time, and if they get rid of it, it's going to mess things up. And I was exactly right, Robbie. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Like, no, well, and it's what it's what I said when we were first talking about Walter and calling attention to that intro animation and how he said that was so important, because I always thought about sort of a Jonathan Hickman Secret Wars situation where that was not just prologue. I thought that that was more foreshadowing than anything, and that is exactly what it was. I mean, it was also prologue, but it was also, it's like, it was both and.
So I'm just kind of excited today, because not only were we right about that plot point, we were also kind of right about Kang, and yet, Robbie, you abandoned me in my biggest time of need today. What the heck? I watched the episode, and I knew you had already seen it, because you texted, wow, that's all you texted me. And I watched it, obviously that's the ending, and I couldn't literally process my thoughts or emotions. And I'm blowing up your phone and you're not answering.
I know.
What is your problem?
Weird day at work, man. But this kept me going. And look, I will say too, just for folks that one, before we get into it, before we forget, if you've been listening to the main Loki episodes but haven't caught some of our interviews over the past few weeks, please do, because I think especially in light of where this has gone, you're really going to enjoy hearing from Michael Waldron, who wrote both the first episode and this episode and is the head writer for the show in general, and from Kate Herron, the director, and from Natalie Holt, whose music here was, as always, incredible. But if you haven't listened to those, and the last thing you heard was our episode 5 review, I want to just hammer home real quick before we get into it that this episode is exactly what I want from this show. Like, and we'll get into all of the actual stuff, but just because I know you and I, we both liked episode 5 a lot, and I don't want anyone to get the takeaway that we didn't, but I feel like a lot of the little bits of uneasiness that I felt in terms of that feeling a bit like things were stalled. Like, it's not that I wanted more like massive plot developments necessarily. It's that, like, in the same way that I loved those conversations that we got in episode 1, even though not a ton necessarily happened, it's the same way here. Like, if you look at what we're about to talk about, I mean, you're dealing with, what, 5 actors the entire time? And most of it is just conversation. And holy cow, like, this is, and also, in hindsight, this makes episode, like I think some folks were saying, in the same way that episode 3 sort of set up episode 4, I think episode 5 was kind of a nice break before an episode that was super heady and super dialogue heavy like this. But I just wanted to say, like, that's from my, I won't speak for you, but from my perspective, if anyone felt like we were saying that things weren't quite what we were wanting in episode 5, I was wanting this, exactly.
You know, I joked about you abandoning me in the biggest time of need. Actually, that's not a joke. I felt abandoned. but it actually got me thinking in a cool way. You know, I get done with this episode. It's such a massive cliffhanger. It's so mind-bending. And I realize, besides Annika, after we got done talking about it, if you don't answer your phone, I don't have a ton of people that I can call and talk about this stuff with, at least not this timely. Mm-hmm. And that just got me thinking, like, that's what I think a lot of our audience has too, right? And that's what's been so cool about this podcast is right. That I do think that this actually can be a genuine community. So, like, when you didn't answer your phone, know where I went? To our Slack channel. And I posted, like, some things, and I got some feedback from listeners, and I just love that that community is kind of being built. I think that's why our podcast can be different, Robbie, is that it's not just us telling you what we think, although that's a big part of it. It's also us wanting to invite you guys into the conversation too. So that you absolutely feel like you have a friend from work.
Wow.
See what I did there? And so lastly, before we dive in, here's how you guys can support us, okay? Please make sure you subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast. We post a lot of our content there. We have some giveaways there, some news stuff. It's a pretty cool place to follow us anywhere on social media. But most importantly, if you listen and share our podcast, that is the biggest support you can give to us. Also, we have a website, the ffwpodcast.com. On that website, there's cool information on our rewatch, and we have a shop there with a t-shirt that we're selling, and I only have a few left, so rush to get those. I want to send them to you. I want to package them up and mail them to you. Let me do that for you. Buying a shirt supports us. Donating to the podcast supports us, and we have been so grateful to be at this point with all of you guys already. So thank you so much to all of you. That's just a quick word on how you can help us. And now, without further ado, it's time to get into Loki, episode 6, for all time.
Oh, man.
Always.
Okay, so we can just jump right into it. This episode is directed by Kate Herron, as always. As I noted, it is written by Michael Waldron. Kyle, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast. This is the way things went. I can't remember with WandaVision, but I know with Falcon Winter Soldier, where Malcolm Spellman wrote both the first and last episodes. And that seems to be the trend. And so I suspected that Waldron would come back for the finale. And man, he did. And in the same way that I came on here and said with that pilot that that was one of the best pilot episodes I had ever seen. And people know that, like, through the series, we talked the ups and downs. It's not that I'm over the top positive all the time with this stuff. But man, same thing here. Like, this is one of the best episodes of television that I've seen, and it makes me so excited that Waldron is heading over to Doctor Strange and you know, presumably Loki Season 2, which we'll get to in a bit. Natalie Holt, like we said, composed the score here. The only major addition to the cast, which we will also talk about a lot, is Jonathan Majors as He Who Remains, a.k.a. Kang the Conqueror. So with that, Kyle, let's get into it.
We need to start right off the bat with the intro title card for two reasons.
Yep, yep,
yep. One, our podcast gets a shout out. Did you hear them include the
clip? I did. It was one of the most vocal ones. Thanks, Kevin.
It was so prominent.
We felt like we really connected in that press conference there, and obviously it like really made its mark.
Let's go. Okay. That was so dope. I just thought that was fun.
Also, I loved the long, long time playing in the background of the voices. It's just like all of the moments they picked from the MCU were so fun. And then the fact that they throw in some real world moments in there.
It was so
cool. It was like universe building in and of itself in like a 20-second montage. It was the coolest way to start this.
It was very different. We haven't had anything like that. For a second, on my second watch, I was trying to pick out, were they like showing the universes and doing the real world stuff, trying to say like, that's the universe we know. Not even the Avengers. I'm saying that's like our universe, us humans. Mm. And then like show another one and you would get an Avengers quote and then another one you'd get like a, and it wasn't like that. I think they were just trying to show all of the different things that we know at this point.
Right. Because, you know, I mean, we had like Thor, but then we also had Greta Thunberg and Maya Angelou. And, but I mean, again, so weird and so cool and visually what was going on there. I mean, one thing that I did, you brought this up about episode 5 that was so fun is the way it began with kind of this meandering camera journey. And the same way here was so cool. I mean, it's that image we've seen from the trailers that folks have speculated about. But seeing it in its proper context was, I mean, it was just a very well done intro to this epic finale.
So to me, although these visuals were a little simplified, there wasn't a giant smoke monster or stuff like that. This was the first time that not a single visual looked at all out of place to me.
Agreed.
A couple of times in the last episode, I thought, like specifically Sylvie running away from the smoke monster, maybe looked a touch CGI, just barely, This was like peak. This felt like Infinity War level visuals.
Right.
Secondly, I wanted to add, again, we're not going to rank this. And so there will be time for us to come back and reflect on the whole series as a whole. Right. I want to go back and watch all six again before I say any kind of number.
Just come down to Austin. We'll just watch them together.
I will say that I agree with your premise in the intro, which is that I do think that the show had a little bit more waviness in hits or misses, and it felt the absence of Waldron. And I think this episode made that more apparent, if that makes sense, because this felt so cohesive and so good. And you're right. The first episode and the last episode, one thing I noticed about it is that they were almost 100% dialogue based.
Yeah.
I mean, this episode, almost nothing else happens. And yet I was like gripping my seat. That's tension. That's suspense without even fighting one time.
And I mean, the dialogue is just fascinating. Like, do you know how, from a writing perspective, how difficult it has to be to hold our attention, like you're saying? Like, I'm agreeing with you 100%. Like, that is not, especially in this kind of context, right? Like, it's one thing to put out kind of an art house film where it's just two people in a kitchen talking about something sad. But, like, in this kind of, like, when people are coming for spectacle and you give them almost, I mean, what, 30 minutes, at least 25, of just three people talking around a table, that's a bold move.
Mm. Yep. It's not normal. And somehow they pull it off. I actually read a couple articles that really praised the finale for that, because they argued, which I disagree with, that Marvel in the past has had a tendency to try to have to fit massive action sequences into their finales. That's what they faulted WandaVision for.
Right. And arguably Black Widow.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And that this one didn't even try to do that. And that was actually a positive thing for some of these reviewers. I'll get to that in a second. I also wanted to add on that title card thing. You know, I'll get to this a little bit later too, but Kevin Feige, he's a little sneaker. They're a little sneaker, and here's why. I felt a little unsettled about the Infinity Saga stuff. I'll explain it later in the episode, teaser till later, okay? But I think he knows that I'm going to feel that way, so I think they sneak in all those voices to also subtly remind you of, like, everything that's happened.
We're still
here. To make me... Yeah, it's like, hey, Kyle, just ease your concerns. Let this just calm you. Kyle, you're feeling worried? Here's Vision talking to you, okay? It's going to be okay. Here's Thor,
man,
Kyle.
I did love that line. I love
Here's Captain America's Endgame song. Are you kidding me? Just stay calm, Kyle. That's what Kevin Feige was just giving me a hug. He was just saying, Kyle, just relax. Anyways, I love that title card. I think that's what they were doing. Let's jump into one of the biggest jump scares in the MCU, which is Miss Minutes popping out of this castle and scaring the bejeebus out of everyone just by saying, hey, y'all.
Man, this whole scene, even right prior to that with the door and the scene outside, like, it immediately starts building this suspense, which is totally different, by the way, than how the pilot started, right? Like, the pilot started in comedy. And then,
well, they don't have the time anymore.
No, obviously. Sure, but it's different. And but here it's like and that's why I made that comment I made about episode 5, where I feel like there was this story we were dancing around, this drama that we were dancing around, and I love that now that we're here, they go straight for it. And just them having the conversation outside the door, but then the conversation with Miss Minutes. I don't know about you. You and I, as always, haven't talked about all of this yet, but the conversation with Loki, with our Loki, about the potential for him to beat Thanos, for him to have the Infinity Stones, for him to finally have the throne of Asgard, that was incredible, because it's such a perfect way of bringing this thing back to Loki, to the Loki that we've known, to the things that, like, the Loki from 2012 wants more than anything else, and now they're just on offer, on a silver platter, and that's the first thing in this episode that he has to now deal with. And you think about that, even just with how far that character's come since episode 1, you know, over the course of 5 episodes, And it's just, it gave me a second to realize how much they've accomplished in a relatively brief amount of time with this character. And it made me think back to something Kate Herron said in our interview, which was, this is a different Loki. He's on a different journey. And we're seeing that in such a, like, that scene just distilled it so perfectly, I thought.
Yes. It made me think about how you walked away from WandaVision with the overarching story being, here is grief. Sometimes it's really hard. How do you move on from it? And what's crazy is I'm walking away from Loki. Yes, we're going to get into all the plot stuff with the MCU and all that. Massive. Game changer. But I'm walking away with that debate of, can you change who you were meant to be or who you are? And that conversation brings that up. Like, Loki is being offered his greatest wish. And honestly, he's being offered even a greater wish now because Sylvie can come with him, who I think he's falling in love with.
Right.
So now he's not only going to not be alone, he can be a ruler of everything. And he's being offered that. And I believe that they think it's possible to do that. And yet, yes, through the development in the six episodes, he has gone from God of Mischief, I can't predict what he's going to do, to here, I believe, and the last scene, by the way, but here I believe that he is now changed enough to turn that down and that he has a different glorious purpose. What a fun way to show that with a conversation with Miss Minutes in the very beginning. I have to get on a quick tangent too that we glossed over a teeny bit. How they visualized this timeline, which think about it, is a very complicated thing to put onto screen. And with the castle. Yeah. Was insane to me. It was so cool how they showed, you know, the title card showed all those universes, and then it goes to like the timeline, like pipe, light pipe that's got all the talking, and then how Kang has got it circled around his citadel.
Right.
And his citadel is on like a floating asteroid, basically. And even his castle itself looks like one of the sticks they use to prune people. Did you notice that? Like,
yeah, which is so cool.
Yeah, and like, and then them walking through the castle was really cool. It was like equal parts creepy, but also dope. And then when Miss Minutes showed up, like, I don't know, from that point on, I mean, let's be honest, the whole episode, like you're saying, I'm bouncing around, sorry, but I felt so much tension there, partially because of how it was visualized.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, what I think is interesting now, even with that scene, and we're going to have a lot of these conversations, I'm sure, is, you know, I guess Kang even knew that they would turn down the offer from Miss Minutes, right? Because he knew how everything would play up to a point. So I thought even on my second watch, I thought even that was kind of interesting where, I mean, does he have Miss Minutes appear just to kind of go through the motions that he knows have to happen for them to wind up at that threshold point? It's so, it starts getting mega heady. Like, I know we've talked Lost, we've talked Doctor Who, and this episode, again, Lost, combined with
Lost.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much, and it's so trippy in such a fun way, and they're just leaning into it. And again, like, man, I love how creative this team is, and I love how much Marvel is willing to let them just go to bat. Like, it is, there is no, like, it's hard just because you and I have to make, or I at least feel like I have to make the statement every now and then. Like, if it wasn't WandaVision that taught you that there is no such thing as a, like, quote unquote Marvel thing, like that just fits into a category. Like, if WandaVision didn't teach you that, then this should for sure teach you that. Because, like, what else is out there with this kind of budget, with this kind of audience, that's doing such, like, daring stuff storytelling-wise? It's so gratifying as a fan. And I hope that our listeners feel the same way. I think that they do from the initial reactions. But, yeah, I mean, it's like,
I can't really tell. Did you like the episode or not? I can't really.
let's talk real quick before I get into Jonathan Majors, where you're just going to have to, like, rein me in real hard. Let's talk briefly about what's going on back at the TVA with Renslayer and Mobius?
Well, that was where my notes went next, because
perfect.
You really only have two pieces at play here. You got the TVA stuff with them two, essentially, and then you have the set piece in the Citadel, and that's about it in the entire episode.
Right.
I really like seeing this interaction again. If there was a complaint I had, it's just that I miss Mobius a little bit.
Sure.
He doesn't get a ton of time here. I would add, though, however, because he doesn't have a crazy, perfectly wrapped story, that does get me excited that he could come back, not only in Loki season two, but elsewhere, which is interesting to me because I totally would have thought ahead of time that Owen Wilson, when he was cast, would just be a one and done.
Same.
You know, like he would be in this show and then move on. But there's now potential that he's signed on for longer, which is cool and exciting for me. Yeah, this part was interesting because this is kind of the left out section of this episode. Obviously, all the focus is going to be on the multiverse and on Kang and on the Citadel. But what's Renslayer talking about? So we find out that she is actually a teacher from that high school, and that's how they start notifying
from 2018.
The TVA we know. Yeah, so not that long. Well, that's the thing. Time doesn't work like that, though. That's we don't know how long they've been there. The TVA is not supposed to operate inside of time.
Right, but it is, I mean, it's kind of interesting to note that from what we can tell, Mobius is from the 90s, she's from 2018. You're right, it doesn't matter that much, but it is kind of, it was just interesting they chose, like, she's someone that was plucked out in the recent past.
I do kind of have a bombshell of a question later about that, though, so remind me.
Oh, man.
But with Renslayer, by the way, the one funny bit in the whole thing was Owen Wilson trying to take her out. And he's like, no, you're right. I'm right back here.
Like, you're of no danger to totally me. Right. We'll see about that. Okay, yeah, no, you're right.
I thought the interesting thing about that conversation was that she says she's going off to find free will. Do you think she's referring to Kang specifically? Like, is she referring to the one person that has free will? Because that's what they just said.
Uh-huh.
Or is she off elsewhere? Like, where is she going?
It's a great question because honestly, when I saw that scene, I had every expectation that she was going to wind up in the scene with the Lokis and Kang.
Correct. Me too.
And that is not what happened. We never saw her again after that.
Right. And that's why, is she just looking to start over fresh somewhere else? Or is she specifically looking for the person who has free will?
I think she's looking for the person and looking to get the ultimate answers. But what I wonder is, in light of what ends up happening, I don't know when she reaches. Well, first, I don't know if she reaches Kang. But if she does, I almost wonder if she reaches an alternate Kang than the one that we met. Whatever Kang is now heading up the TVA that Loki is reintroduced to at the end of the episode.
Right. Like, maybe once she gets there, he's not as benevolent.
Right.
Potentially.
Right.
Okay. And then obviously the comic book reference being that she was his girlfriend,
right,
in the comics. So there's always that underlying tension of, is she going to meet up with him?
And you know, I mean, I'm really interested to see where that character goes, but she had very little in the way of any kind of redemption in this episode. I mean, it was not, I think I had some expectation, not high, but I wondered if there was going to be a bit of a softening of her character. And by and large, she, if anything, is, I think, kind of become more jagged by the whole thing and is, I think, unsettled by, which is fair, we talked about that, like how she needs to be unsettled by the lack of what she previously thought was certain. But also, like, those lines of, like, where, and again, I mean, the dialogue is just fantastic. And I hope we can have, I would love it if we could have Waldron on again to talk about it now that all of this is sort of fleshed out. But the bits there where Mobius is saying, like, we can't take away people's free will, like what you were just referencing, and for her to say the only people that have free will are the people in charge. Like, that is a cold take, man.
As you're talking, I'm kind of thinking to myself, that's another thing we were right about, by the way. We both said, we're pretty sure it's not going to wrap up perfectly here by the end. This is not going to be a, hey, it's all over, we're good, multiverse war avoided.
Right.
And we were right.
Turns out Loki learned a great lesson about himself, and now that's the end.
Yeah, exactly. She doesn't learn a ton, it seems like, or at least she's not changing in that way. She's not warming up, you're correct, which I think is just meant to be, hey, her story's not over yet. We're going to see more of her later.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But then let's get back to the
main goodness here.
Okay.
I just want to say, because it's got to come out, and then I'll let you move forward with more worthwhile conversation. But whenever it was first announced that Jonathan Majors would be playing Kang in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, I was very excited, and I think I said this on the podcast, although folks may not have been listening that far back, because I'm a huge fan of his performance in a film called The Last Black Man in San Francisco, which if you haven't seen, you should definitely go see. Also, if you're a music lover like we are, the score for that film is actually literally one of my favorites. He also was in Lovecraft Country on HBO, which has been nominated for a variety of Emmys, was really great in that. So I was always very excited. But I just want to say, and I'm not, we don't have to get into any kind of rankings or anything like that, but he killed his performance in this episode so intensely in a way that, like, I was blown away. Like, we're talking about how there's so much of this that's dialogue, and I, like, every utterance of his is endlessly interesting to me. Like, the way that he delivers each line so perfectly, it's charismatic, it's wild, it's strange, it's like it's like weirdly enchanting. And I'm just gonna say, like, I am
tell
so
us how you really feel.
I'm so excited that he's sticking around in this universe that we know. You know, you and I initially talked, like, okay, well, now Kang's here and we know that he's going to be the villain in Quantumania, and that's, and we'll talk about that at the end of the episode, but that's several years out. And what does that mean? And for me, like, man, depending on where this character goes and the different variants, he is the character, which is, which I, you know, all tribute to Waldron, is on track to be one of my favorite villains that we've gotten so far. And,
okay.
And I just want to say, in terms of Jonathan Majors, I think he might be the most exciting, again, for me, the most exciting new presence in the MCU since Josh Brolin.
Holy cow. It's so rare that we come to this episode with you just blowing my excitement out of the water. Like, I was excited. I liked it. I don't know that I can go quite as far as you just went. Like, I thought he did well, and I'm excited to see what he can do. So, but anything I say from this point on pales in comparison to how you feel, apparently. So no matter what, I'm going to look like the villain here.
No,
if I say,
I just,
he was really great. You're like, what? He's not the greatest thing to ever happen
just,
to anyone
I'm
ever?
I'm just saying, go back. If anyone's listening and they're doubting me, go back and watch any of those scenes. And it's like, what I mean by that is there are lines that on the page were still well written. Like I said, I want to give Waldron credit for that. But there's so much talking, and it could become boring, especially given a finale that's supposed to be kind of the peak of the drama. And instead, it's like the delivery he has for each of these little things, like the way he says, like, the look at the lake, where it's like super, like, hyper enunciated sometimes. He starts, like, giggling all the time. Like, it's like, I just felt like they gave, I don't know if it was if something he brought or if it was Kate Herron, I'm sure was a big part of it too, but, like, just the way that he was able to make all of that dialogue sparkle, I think, is super impressive. And I just want, if for whatever reason Jonathan ever ends up listening to this episode, I want him to know how much we appreciate what he gave
us.
Okay,
well, when he comes on this podcast, now we'll play him this first. If he didn't think you were a fan before, now we know. One of the best miniseries ever made is a show from the BBC called Sherlock, with Benedict Cumberbatch. And this totally reminds me of Moriarty's performance. This is,
yes,
it's like a mix of Moriarty
thing
and the Joker, kind of.
Yes. In terms of the on-screen charisma.
Yeah, it was very Moriarty-like. What will be really interesting to see, and we'll talk about this in more detail, but obviously the end of the episode is that there's going to be other versions of Kang. And so I'll be fascinated to see when another one shows up. Does he totally play it different? Right? Like, does he show up as one that is like a conqueror? If he shows up more like Napoleon and confident, and like, does he play each version differently now? Like, was this the one that was this quirky? You know, we don't know that, but
there's a
lot of room for creative flexibility there.
Well, and again, just his willingness to even just with this to play around with it and make it his own, I think makes, you're right, like it makes all that potential all the more exciting.
All right, let's dive into this scene a touch more after a quick word from our sponsor, Adam Tickets. If you're listening to this podcast, you obviously love movies. And I want to introduce you to the best way to go to the movies, Adam Tickets. Adam Tickets, ATOM, is a movie ticketing app that's super easy to use. It lets you buy your movie tickets ahead of time, pick your seats, and at lots of theaters, you can even pre-order your concessions. That's right, your concessions. Annika and I actually just did that last week when we saw Black Widow. It was dope. We showed up and our popcorn and Coke were ready for us right when we got there. Right now, they're offering our listeners $2 off any movie ticket with the code FRIENDSFROMWORK. All one word, FRIENDSFROMWORK. If you're a first-time user, go get the Adam Tickets app. They have iOS and Android versions. And go see a movie. Let's get back in the theaters, y'all. Black Widow is now finally out. We loved it. Go see it. The new Fast and Furious movie is out. A Quiet Place 2 is out. There's lots for you to see for the first time in a long time. And this app tickets thousands of theaters across the entire United States. Enter code FRIENDSFROMWORK, all one word, to get $2 off your movie ticket on the Adam Tickets app. Terms apply. Okay, so this scene in his citadel with Kang, although they never call him that. By the way, calling him He Who Remains is the most incredible name they could have come up with. Is that from the comics? Just yes or no, quick.
Not that I know of.
Okay, because it was just so cool from the beginning of that walk through the castle with the conversation from Miss Miz, how she calls him He Who Remains, the creepiness there. And then, did you notice how quickly they shut off the Miss Minutes conversation after that? He's like, we control our own timeline. She just goes, okay, and leaves.
Right.
And that He Who Remains thing was so dope. Like, they could not have revealed him any better. Anyways, they get to that conversation, and we basically get an exposition on the timeline stuff. I mean, it's like, just straight up, they just tell us how it works for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
My understanding, this is my takeaway for anyone out there who's slow about it like me, okay?
I'm actually excited to hear this.
Okay, so there's all these multiverses, right, at one point. Then each multiverse has a version of this character named Kang. And at first, all these multiverses were friendly to each other, right? Passing along knowledge to help out the other one, etc. Meaning, like, let's say in one of them, they're struggling with famine. And so another guy comes in and says, hey, here's how you genetically grow grain. I just made that up, right? But then that's how they help each other out. But somewhere in there, they start getting angry at each other, and not everybody is as benevolent as this version of Kang. So they fight. And in this war, my understanding is this version of Kang discovers Eliath. And Eliath is the key to him stopping the other multiversal war. Somehow Eliath can eat up the timelines just being Eliath, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's right.
So that's their explanation for stopping that, the monster.
Which that is a different version of Eliath than what we discussed there in episode 5 from the comics, which again, totally fine with, but worth noting.
And then he explains to them that they have two choices. One is they could work for the TVA, run it basically, and even change how they do it. Like, tell everyone at the TVA the truth. Don't lie to them. Don't make up fake timekeepers. And you can do it how you want to do it. But that way, it keeps the main timeline going. The other option is kill him. And what he's saying, I think, is that if you kill him, all these other multiverses are going to expose. And then it's going to be another multiversal war. We're in this multiversal war. Another version of Kang will again have to figure out how to end the multiversal war, will again discover Eliath, and will again end the multiversal war and end up back in the seat like he is now.
Right.
That's all correct, right?
In terms of what he communicated, yes, I think.
which is kind of epic.
Yeah.
That was my understanding of that in two watches. I loved it.
Yeah.
That's why I think he says, I'll see you soon, and he winks at her, right?
So, yes. Well, and I want to talk about that line as well at the very end here.
I know that was crazy. That's the easiest I can make that.
No. I think this is the good time to talk about it some, because I think this is the kind of stuff that we need to be working through here. And, okay, let's look at what the sacred timeline has been here briefly, because you and I, this is the only thing we got to talk about some today. I know that there could be some concern here, because this goes back to what we talked about really early on, where they introduced the free will versus determinism thing. And here, based on what he's saying, it would seem to be, okay, now we're back at determinism.
Pause, which is crazy, because that's exactly the argument they were having in episode one, that they then basically said, no, you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whoever.
Right.
Like, they had basically told us it was free will. And yet now again, the Cloverfield thing, we're back to, no, it's not.
Right. Which is such good storytelling. And I'm so into it. But I think here, this is my read. And I want to see if you're on the same page. My understanding has been that the person that you're talking about that found Eliath and started meeting with folks, like you said, like he's part of the timeline that we've seen. And that doesn't mean, in my mind, that he made the things happen that we've seen happen. So it's not like he made
Correct.
Tony build the Iron Man armor. It's not that he made Cap stand up to Thanos there at the end. But I think rather that was the history. I mean, because he lived in the what, 3000s?
He said 31st century. So I guess 3000 something.
So I think that is just the history of his timeline on Earth. And I think that his mission has been, as a way to keep this war from happening, to make it so that his timeline is the only one that can happen. So every time someone makes a choice that makes them diverge or makes anything diverge from that timeline, that's what the pruning is. So,
okay, pause.
Is that right?
So just by chance, he is in the timeline that we know with Tony and Steve and Thanos. That's by chance, this version's of Kang's timeline, just theoretically 1,000 years in the future, correct?
Right. That's my read. It could be wrong. I'm welcome to hear that I'm wrong if anyone out there has an objection, but that was my understanding.
Okay. That's my understanding too. Now, here's a question I had, okay? We were told from the get-go that the TVA existed outside of time.
Right.
That it doesn't take place in a timeline of sorts, correct? It is like the void,
right?
Not in that time. Okay. Then why, at the end, do we see another TVA? Do you have an answer? We see another TVA, which is supposed to be outside of time. So when all the multiverses start branching off and there's other timelines, why is the TVA being duplicated?
That is the biggest
question. Is
that an
error?
I don't think so. This show feels too thoughtful to me for that to just be a slip up, because it's the crux of the whole final scene. I don't know though. I mean, the error, I guess, what I was wondering the whole time, because you know, some of this has been a lie, right? We've established that, and some of it's the truth. The reason why we knew that what they said about Loki's magic was true is because he couldn't do anything, and that he also tried to use the Tesseract, and like none of that would work. But the reason for all of that was always, well, this is kind of a pocket dimension outside of reality. But if this has now been affected by this, then why were those prior things true that we were just talking about? Like, and I legitimately don't know. Like, I guess all I can say is maybe the TVA is not constructed the way that we thought it was, and maybe there's another reason why Loki's powers didn't work, or the Infinity Stones didn't work. Unless, you know, like, yes, it's outside of time, but maybe you could argue that because the TVA has to have been built by somebody and some other being came in and took that over in the aftermath of the ending of this episode, then maybe that, but I still don't get why that would reset everybody.
My next major question in that scene, why did right then and there they cross that quote unquote threshold? Why right then were the realities starting to branch? So he made a big point of that. He understood everything that happens with this timeline. He's been there through all of it until this moment. What happened that right there he was so surprised that now he doesn't know? Is it just because Loki and Sylvie were there and their love was a Nexus event, or they started asking questions, and or is it just by chance that it started branching? What did I miss?
I thought that it was just the choice. Like, he knew everything up until the moment where he gave them the option. And then that was where his knowledge ceased. So,
and then him giving them the option was unique.
Right, right. I think at that point, he didn't know what was going to happen legitimately. He didn't know if they were going to take over. He didn't know if they were going to kill each other. He didn't know if they were going to kill him.
And I think that was kind of fun for him. That was the whole point.
Right, right. I think what I loved as we're talking about all of the kind of timeline craziness, which we'll, I'm sure, circle back to again, is that in all of that, and this is, again, the genius of the way this episode was written, it's still about Loki. Like, that's what's crazy here, is we're dealing with, like, mega, mega stuff for this mythology that like, I mean, we're talking, and we'll be talking, I'm sure, in the weeks to follow about the implications of this. But still, in that moment, it's rooted in the character of Loki and the character of Sylvie. And that's why I think this episode worked so well for me, because it was doing really interesting things philosophically. It was doing really fun kind of sci-fi experimental stuff, but it was also doing good character work and following up on the stuff that we've gotten, that we've enjoyed from Loki and from Sylvie. And so I thought, like, the fact that he was able to kind of bring that back to, you know, you can't trust and I can't be trusted as the way that everything finally ends up going down, I thought was really powerful.
Yeah, super cool part. And so cool to see Loki finally fully changed, right? I mean, right. There was no trickeration there anymore. And that was really, really sad, honestly, that Sylvie still couldn't trust. The throne bit actually got me, because I felt bad for Loki, because I truly don't think he wanted it anymore, the throne. And when she, like, boiled it down to that, I was like, no, Sylvie, no.
Right.
That's not what he's talking about here. He's not asking for anything other than just to think about it for a second before we go crazy. It was so tense and so perfect.
Well, and the thing that I really appreciated about it is it felt like that felt right based on the characters that we've met. Like, and that's my biggest thing with these things. And I think people can maybe glean that from the reactions I've had to certain things. But, like, I just want it to be, like, show me you've earned whatever is happening. Like, I don't, if you've told me a character is this way, and then all of a sudden they're doing this other thing, that just, it takes me out of it, and it sort of smacks of cheap writing to me. But I think based on Sylvie's story, and based on the relatively small amount of time that she has spent with Loki, and based on who Loki is, which is, I mean, every time we've seen him, it's like, another double cross. I mean, that's the whole joke with him and Mobius. It absolutely makes sense that she would say, oh, you just want the throne. But it's also heartbreaking because we have seen him over the course of the series get to a point where he doesn't anymore. And so you can eat, like, in that moment, I think what makes it play so well is you can fully understand where both of them are coming from. Mm. And that's what makes it, that's what made it hit so hard for me.
For you Lost fans out there, holy cow, there were so many parallels. Not only last episode did we get a smoke monster and a hatch that they all went in. If you really dove into Lost, I mean, the scene where Ben stabs Jacob, realizing he made a massive mistake.
Yes.
Because even though Jacob is mean to him and a little insane, he is telling the truth about what he's doing on the island. I mean, this is crazy parallel.
Right.
You know, Sylvie stabs him, not fully understanding what's going to happen. And then right. Jacob originally called all the people to the island. By the way, I'm just slaughtering Lost for you. If you've never seen Lost, I'm ruining the entire thing. So spoiler alert here. I'll give you a second to turn it off if you want to go back 15 years.
I'm always
years
telling people
Lost.
To go back and watch Lost. Candace and I rewatched like the first two seasons not that long ago, and it absolutely holds up.
I'll keep this really short so you can just hit skip 30 seconds on your app and don't turn it away. For you non-Lost people, hit 30 seconds forward. For you Lost people, Jacob brings everybody to the island to choose someone to take over his role. I mean, it's literally
right.
this situation.
Right.
So the influences of Lost are all over that.
Well, and I think
welcome
Kate
back,
Heron
everyone
and,
who
I think Kate Heron and Michael Waldron have both actually been pretty vocal about the Lost and a lot of influences. That was one thing she talked about in our interview, but I think Lost is certainly one of them, which I love, and I know you love because that's maybe one of your all-time favorites.
Tom Hiddleston's performance was notable here. I really bought the whole fight with Sylvie and his dialogue to her.
Right.
Finally telling her he wanted her to be okay was very emotional.
Well,
and he's never had somebody to not be alone.
I know. Well, and he has to now be the one that, like, it's funny because we've gotten different iterations of this, like in episode 3 when he's like telling her to take the subtle route instead of the like addressing everything head on with aggression. And we got a call back to that at the beginning with, are you going to tell me not to kick the door down? And that follows through all the way where what we're seeing, you know, it's like I go back to the Avengers and when Thor is kind of pleading with Loki to just give it up because like, can't you see how this is all going to end and it's not going to end in your rule? And Loki just basically ignores him and plows on and then gets defeated and everything goes poorly for him. And I feel like what was really interesting here is now Loki was in that position of being like, look, like this is not like, I get it. I get that you're angry. I get that you feel you're owed this. I've felt that. I've been there, but this is dangerous. There's more going on here than us. And if you cross this line, like, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be good. And that Sylvie is the one kind of playing the Loki, you know, our Loki, like, in this situation.
Another Lost spoiler, so skip ahead. It's so much like post the incident Jack, where Jack is like the fiery leader. He's aggressive. And then when he realizes more information and he realizes he screwed some stuff up, he comes back as super quiet, doesn't have anything to say. The wise one trying to think about it. And what's crazy about that show is you go full circle and Jack is now become John Locke and John Locke has become Jack as the aggressive
right.
one.
Right.
And that's what this kind of is. It's exactly right. Loki now has gone through enough and seen enough of this stuff, heard enough from Mobius, seen enough of the TVA's lies, and seen enough of his future to now have a full role reversal where he's the one saying, I have nothing to say. We don't need to kick the door down. I'll just follow you. And he's the one going like, let's just think about this for a second. No more aggression, which is crazy because, again, it's just 6 episodes ago that he was the exact opposite. So I'm with you. That part was crazy.
Right.
We also need to talk about he then gets thrown back through the temp pad. She stabs him. Kang lets her stab him. does the wink.
Which, by the way, says, I also wanted to say, I thought that fight scene looked really great. Like, we talked about kind of the visuals, and
it
I
did
thought that
look
fight
a
scene
lot
fun.
Better than the episode 4-1. I thought
right.
a lot
Agreed.
Better. So, step up. Again, I loved this finale. I said before this episode, I didn't think whatever happened in the finale would lower my ranking. I said it would take a ton for it to go up in my ranking, and I think it is going to go up. Like,
yeah.
that's how good the finale was. But this show was not without flaws, everybody. The sure. way Robbie's talking about it, you're acting like, yeah, wow. Anyways, it is that good, but come on. Anyways, it is good, but let's just, you know, everyone take a deep breath. We got to process this a little bit, okay? Okay, anyways, it did look good, the fight scene. They go through the 10 pad. Here's what I want to talk about. I thought the actual ending could not have been any better.
Right.
It could not have been any better. In any scenario, in any multiverse, this version of us on Earth getting to see this ending never
this is
happens
one in 14
better.
Million.
Yes, none of them happen better. Dude, here's why. I mean, just absolutely genius to have Loki sitting there and just have this look of depression on Tom Hiddleston's face. Wow, right. this is becoming a trend in the Disney Plus shows, this grief.
Right.
This alone, right. this sorrow is becoming a trend. I think it's because these are all characters that in the past have not had the screen time to go there.
Right.
Now with these shows, they're getting their own time so we can get these deep dives into these, you know, realistic looks at their depression,
Man.
Like WandaVision.
I mean,
but now look at this version of Loki.
Yeah,
he's so
no.
beaten down.
I mean,
he's
this
lost.
Is my... This is my obligatory Thor 2 reference on the podcast, but
thank you.
I've always said, like, the little brief moment we get with him there whenever he's dealing with Frigga's death has always been one of my favorite Hiddleston moments. I've always said that I thought Hiddleston did an exceptional job in a very unexceptional movie, but this is the most that we've really gotten to see that really extended and magnified. And I love it.
It sets up so well for a massive, massive redemption arc.
Yes.
We talk about how Thor has lost everything, and that's what made him coming back and being worthy so stinking powerful.
Right.
But, dude, here's another guy now. I mean, think about it. He's
you know,
lived a life where he's failed, but now he's also seen a life where in the future he dies and loses everyone. And now in this outside of time realm, he still loses and loses everyone.
And this is a Loki that has turned down everything. So, like, not only is he dealing with the loss, but he's dealing with the loss after having let go of everything that not that long ago he would have given everything for. Like,
and he
I
had
think,
a way out. Yeah, he had a way out, and he
yeah.
didn't take it.
And that's why, to go back to something you and I have been talking about for nearly a year, I am finally at a point where, and this is maybe controversial, but given how far this Loki has moved, I am actually interested now, especially in light of kind of Richard Grant's performance in episode 5, in seeing Loki potentially reunite with Thor. And that's a bold thing because I've been very against that from the beginning. I'm not saying I want it to go back anything like what it was, but given the journey that those two characters have now been on their own, and obviously this, you know, as we'll talk about, Loki has a lot more of a journey to go on. But I never thought I would say that, Kyle, because you and I were always talking about how much, like, I did not want them to ruin what
right.
I thought was a really powerful scene in Infinity War. But now I think that, like, they have done enough really great character work here that I'm kind of like, I do want to see this version of Loki meet up with Thor.
You're not wrong. Let's come back to that in 1 second. You're not wrong. It's also crazy, speaking of losing everything, that he kind of now has lost Mobius, because as we see, he's not even
oh,
in the
so
same
true.
TVA
yeah.
with the Mobius that he had character development with. This is what
right.
I mean by the best closing scene ever. That depression, then him making up his mind of like,
yes.
I'm going for it anyways. Combine that with getting to see the visual of the branch timelines, like which, like I said, could not have been visualized better. So
no.
cool. with Natalie Holt's score here, which I have chills right now thinking about.
I know. The entire time, I was just constantly conscious of, and it was constantly blowing my mind.
The climax of this thing being him going back to the TVA and delivering the coolest performance where he sees Mobius and just says, like, again, how far has this character come? Oh my gosh, how far has he come? He's the one who goes, we made a mistake. I messed up. We were not supposed to do this. This is wrong. I have chills right now. I'm doing this. Holy crap, I have chills. we were not supposed to do this. We have to stop this guy. We've messed this up. It's leading to a massive multiversal war. We've made a mistake. And then chills of Mobius looking at him go, okay, take a breath. Who are you? Are you a hunter? Are you a
agent?
Are you an analyst? Who are you? And then, oh my gosh, dude, never a cooler ending than for him to look up and see those statues that we made such a point of pointing out earlier, now has changed to just Kang. I have chills. Yeah. I have chills right now. Like this whole time. Unbelievable ending. That was like Office finale level of like, you can't end it better than that last shot. That was unbelievable.
I absolutely agree. I mean, it was just, it left me like in some ways, the best ending is also going to be the ending that you're furious with because you want more from
right.
it. But it's, I mean, it's so different from, I'm not saying better or worse, but so different from the WandaVision or Falcon Winter Soldier ending, which left with like a real sense of kind of closure and accomplishment. Like, right, like WandaVision ends where Wanda is kind of fully realized and is now chasing after what that looks like for her. And this is much more, it's like what I told you earlier. Like, this is nothing in the MCU has ended on a note like this at all, other than Infinity War and arguably Far From Home. But like, even those, I would say, had a bit more of a conclusion. And this, I don't mean to say that as an insult, obviously, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm saying I think that, like, in the amount of things that are now hanging in the balance post this episode, yet it felt fully satisfactory to me. I don't mean to say that at all and that it didn't do what it needed to do, because I think it did exactly what it was supposed to do. And now everyone I've talked to today is just, like, frothing at the mouth for season two, which is incredible.
What's interesting is, yeah, this is the first thing that's truly a TV show in that way.
Yeah.
Even WandaVision, they're not making a season two, or at least not now. And it's, yeah, they didn't leave it open really for season two. It wasn't meant to be. It was supposed to be a look at Wanda's background, a look at Sam and Bucky's background. Let's get deeper into their character. This is clearly, you know, setting up the future more and is leaving the door open for us to come back to it, no doubt. That right there, what we just talked about, was kind of my review portion of the episode. I thought it was unbelievable television. I thought it looked the best it's looked. I thought the acting was captivating. I thought the writing was so good that they could get away with the finale basically having no action, and yet I still felt so much suspense. Kind of honestly, like one of my favorite scenes in the MCU ever, which is the car ride with Michael Keaton, Vulture, in Spider-Man, how there's no action and yet I'm as tense as I've ever been. That's how I felt during this finale.
Right.
So that part of it was good. I love where it's leaving things and a cliffhanger, and that's intriguing and it gives us a lot to talk about. So on the review front, I was very, very happy on the finale. I do think the show, as we'll reflect on later, was still not perfect. And I still need to like evaluate how it makes me feel compared to others and how well it did that. And we'll come back to that later. In a different episode, to clarify. Not now. So that was the review front. But now I need to quickly talk about what this means for the MCU. Because we kind of did that with the other shows.
Yeah.
And the other shows did leave some things open, as I said.
But, I mean,
this, right. This is obviously like, okay, holy cow. The first thing I want to amend, last week on this podcast, I brought up how What If isn't canon. And it's just, you know, and it's starting to feel a lot like now they could get away with What If actually being canon. This is just different looks into other universes.
No,
which
kind
of makes What If cooler. Let's be honest.
No, 100. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think this you know, Tom was interviewed recently and pointed to What If, I don't know if you saw this.
No.
As being the a place where the foundation was laid for a lot of things in the MCU going forward. And, okay, you always have to take that stuff with a grain of salt because we've been burned before, looking at you, Paul Bettany. But
yeah, right.
I thought that that was so interesting ahead of this because, like, I mean, this is kind of what I have written down here for the end of this. Like, I thought what was fascinating is where this leaves these upcoming projects because we've already dealt with Mobius and obviously we have a Loki season two coming and it's hard to really say what that's going to look like until we know when it comes because we know we are at this point like 8 months out, 9 months out from Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and I don't know if that's, I think that's going to come before Loki because Waldron.
It has to be. There's no way they can film it in time, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, so Waldron has said, which I think is interesting, that he basically said he was writing in Loki a massive mess. And he thought part of the fun was waiting to see who was going to clean this up, which, by the way, is a very, like, this. I'm loving this because it's the MCU is becoming more and more akin to the Marvel Comics universe because that's part of the fun of comics writing is, like, a great example is, like, Daredevil. Like, you write a character into this insane hole, and then it's the next writer's job to figure out how to get them out of it, and it spurs really creative, different stories. And it just kind of creates this fun, ongoing experience for the reader. And I like that was how he was approaching this. And then he joked about, I'm sure you and I saw the same thing, but he joked about how then, whenever he got hired on Doctor Strange, he now had to be the one to clean up his own mess.
But this is where I have to jump in and be the voice of reason, okay?
Sure.
Because this ties into the Thor thing I said too. Let's get into this. This is so small of me. This is like only 5% of my brain, okay? But I couldn't shake this weird feeling when it was over because you and I talked about the exact opposite of what you just said. Yes, that's fun in the comic universe, but what we've loved about the cinematic universe is that they've been able to keep this stuff so tight. And such a cohesive one story. And so you're saying this thing right now about the comics universe, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know that I want that in my movie universe. Like, I understand what you're saying about how now Loki has gone through so much that you want to see Thor, which I agree. That's my same struggle with White Vision, though, is that I still don't know how I feel. I'm like 50% like, okay, it would be so dope to have Vision back because I want him in and it's such a good story and he's gone through so much and there's more to tell with him. And it's a comic story like that so you can bring him back and you can write him in a hole and get him out. And there's so much more now that we could see Loki. We could see like a hero Loki and it would be fun. And like, what would Thor think of this version of Loki who's now kind of more morally good and there's so many fun stories. At the same time, I can't help but feel a little bit hesitant. I'm not raining on anyone's parade. I'm not trying to rain on anyone's parade. I loved this episode. I can't help but be like, are we going against what we just said in that now people can just come back to life in a multiverse and like now we have a new version of this and now Loki's back and he can interact and like, can anyone truly die then? And like, are we going to erase other things? And I know I'm going too crazy.
But that's where my brain went
for a second when it's like, you're introducing all these realities now.
I totally understand where you're coming from. You're not crazy. I think for me, I stand by what I've always said. I don't want a world, at least right now, in which Loki and Thor are back to being like Asgardian brothers that are, you know, out on adventures together. I don't think that that benefits Thor's storyline. I don't think that it benefits Loki's storyline. I do think it could create an interesting Infinity War-esque moment that could be moving for Thor to see the kind of the version of Loki that he always thought was there within his brother and that he never could fully bring out until basically his death. And likewise, for Loki to get a glimpse fleetingly of his brother having gone through all these things and sort of like transcended the kind of oafishness that Loki always ascribed to him. And I'm going to say that to be the same, by the way, for what I'm looking for from No Way Home. Like, as we're looking at the multiverse thing, what I think that Marvel's going to give us, and I could be totally wrong, is little glimpses of things like that that move along our core characters in the core storyline. And that's why I'm not bothered, because at the end of the day, Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios has been telling a singular story. And like you said at the beginning, the opening credits show that. Like, they're committed to that kind of story and what's come before. And we've gotten things from interviews from Kevin Feige and from Waldron where they say they have been really careful to not trample on what's come before because they know how meaningful that story has been for so many people. So I think that as we're looking at what this sets up, we look at What If, and that's a fun way of saying, look, the multiverse is unleashed. Here's what it looks like. You see all these things, and who knows what that's going to lead to, but these are all of the kind of different realities that have now been opened up. And then you get into No Way Home in December, and that's still, in my mind, hopefully, focused on Tom Holland's Spider-Man that we have in this universe, but now everything's been opened up, and he's going to get a glimpse of Tobey Maguire, potentially, maybe, and Andrew Garfield, potentially, maybe.
Oh, I think at this point, 100%. I mean, this makes sense why they all are here now, and all the old villains and stuff.
Right. Well, and then with Doctor Strange being the Multiverse of Madness, obviously, and that all sort of coming to hopefully a head. Like, to me, it's exciting because you and I have been talking about this. Like, from day one, we've been talking about what are the opportunities to move forward. And we said one of them was kind of a multiverse thing, and one of them was a ground level thing. And between Falcon Winter Soldier and arguably that, and even parts of Spider-Man, and then obviously the other parts of Spider-Man and WandaVision and Loki, like, I think that they're doing both of those. And I think, for me, I am not troubled because I sense an arc here. I don't sense the floodgates are loose, nothing matters, every character is every character, and nothing really has any real substantial lasting value. Like, I don't think that we have to go there yet.
Okay, hold on. I have so much to respond to here. First of all, what I don't like, though, is that you're just kind of saying, as long as they do it in a fun, unique way, you're okay with changing your opinion on that stuff. Because it's getting to the point where now it's
That's not necessarily true.
Yes, it is. Listen to me. Gamora, right? Okay, now she's back, but they did it in a unique way. So that's how they can bring her back without her death really mattering. And now they're searching for a different version. Okay, that's one time. Okay, now...
Which
Vision.
I'm, by the way, I'm still not fully on board with that. I have to see
but
how
that's
that plays
what I'm saying.
Out.
Like, but now we're getting dangerous territory, okay? Because now Vision, it's not the same Vision, but then Vision implants his memories in Vision, and now it might become more of the same Vision. Okay, they did it in a fun way, so I'm okay with deaths not mattering. Careful, that's two. Now Loki, okay, he's back in the universe. He's fighting with Doctor Strange and Wanda. I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying we gotta be really careful of deaths meaning something.
No, I'm totally with you. But I think
otherwise,
that they
will. What are we doing if you can just erase it and come back in a different way each time?
I think
like
that
if
they
Tony
will.
Stark or Captain America makes an appearance, what are we doing?
Well, okay. I mean, you and I we talked about this last episode. Like, I don't if Chris Evans shows up
on
screen.
I'm sorry, by the way.
No. But if Chris Evans shows up on screen, I'm not going to feel that as the Captain America that we've seen move forward. And same thing with RDJ. Like, I think that they know that. Like, one, I don't
but
think that it'll
case,
happen contractually.
But in this case, this is the same Loki.
Well, but what I think what's interesting about it is they had to earn it. Like, White Vision has not earned it. Like, they haven't tried to. And that's a whole different thing. And I think that, if anything, is a conversation to be had around this kind of Dark Avengers Thunderbolts conversation that we were having in our Black Widow episode. But I
what
think
about Gamora?
Gamora, I have honestly more hesitations about because I think in some ways that was the emotional core of Infinity War. And I'm not totally down with her coming back yet, and I'm not even sure that I love that. That's one of the parts of Endgame that I'm not sure sits very well with me. But I'm also giving James Gunn the opportunity to do this holiday special and Love and Thunder, which, I mean, not James Gunn, but Taika Waititi, and then James Gunn coming back in Volume 3, where my hope is that they are finding a way to deal with what needs to clearly be dealt with when it comes to the character of Gamora and the status of the Guardians of the Galaxy before we just pop back into like, oh, well, now it's Gamora, but she's old Gamora, so it's different. Like, I'm with you, by the way. Like, I don't want you to think I'm on the opposite side of the field here. Like, I'm fully on the same page where I want these things to matter. I mean, you and I had our debates about Happy and about Rhodey and about these moments that maybe could have been more but weren't. And I'm definitely with you when it comes to the Loki death, the Vision death, and the Gamora death. I'm just saying, I think that what's really interesting is Marvel is going into some truly kind of wild sci-fi stuff, and I think that's really fun as long as they remember that there are characters who have narratives and that they have to honor those. And so, like, I think if Loki, at the end of all of this, like we've always said, winds up just like palling up with Thor again and they just move on forward, I'm probably going to be a little upset about that just because they've already told me that there was this whole arc that I was supposed to care about, and I did. However, what they're doing with this alternate Loki in terms of taking him into a totally different sort of sphere is very interesting to me storytelling-wise, in the same way where, like, Vision, if Vision and Wanda had flown off together at the end, White Vision, then I think you and I would have had a lot of issues with that. But that's not what happened.
But we don't White know Vision that still. Off.
Well, we don't know that.
Yeah, but they still could do that.
They still could do that, but there was zero indication of that. Like, they could do that down the line, and I think that that in and of itself creates some interesting kind of dramatic suspense. But I think that as of right now, Wanda knows that White Vision is out and did not choose to go and try and find him. Instead, she went to her cabin and is doing her own thing. And I think so much of WandaVision was ultimately about Wanda finding herself. And that's what was so powerful about it. And so I'm saying, I think so far, these kind of alternate versions of people, with the exception of Gamora, just because we haven't really gotten enough time with that version of Gamora, they have created interesting new moments that don't really conflict yet to me with what's come before. And I just have to believe, again, based on those quotes that we've gotten, that they're going to be hyper careful about that. And that's why you and I have, as we've been talking about these Spider-Man movies and how they're shaping up, which is a conversation for another day, that's one of those reasons why I think I'm getting more comfortable with, okay, now this is wide open. Yes, like if you want to end up dealing with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and Alfred Molina and Jamie Foxx and whoever else, as long as you're still respecting the Tom Holland story that John Watts has been telling all along, I think that that creates some really interesting stuff, and I'm okay with that.
Can I respond here for a second? I love this episode. I loved it. And I trust Kevin Feige implicitly. Like, I do think he cares about what I care about. So I'm not that worried about it. But I have to still bring some of this stuff up. Like, tell me I'm not crazy. Like, by nature, does it not make the grounded stories like Black Widow and Falcon Winter Soldier and even WandaVision's story, does it not make them feel just a touch smaller when you have something this big going on? Does your mind not immediately go to, like, the debate over should Sam take the shield? Doesn't that feel a little less relevant now? Like, just a teeny bit. And, like, with Thanos, right? One of the coolest things about Thanos to me in Endgame was that they did this time travel stuff and tried to trick him, and he was still so powerful and wise that he caught on to it and still found a way to overcome their trickeration. So I see a show like this and I'm like, does it not a little bit feel like they're saying, yeah, but here's the real bad guy? Just a pinch, a dash of it. Like that is a little bit of a fair concern, I think. Just barely. It's just by nature when you dive into this kind of stuff.
I think that, no, for sure. I mean, you know where I sit with this stuff. Like
I'm not crazy with that.
No, you're not at all. And I agree with you. However, my alarms aren't going off yet, because I think, again, it goes back to the Infinity Stone stuff from the first episode. I think this is a different kind of a situation. Like we are not being told right now, like, look, Kang was just killed by Sylvie. Like, we're not being told at all that he's more powerful than Thanos.
Right. Not it's strictly just power as far as being stabbed. Right. But I just mean, right, like, if Thanos is in that room, I think he could have found a way to actually kill him physically. Yes. Right. But I'm saying, like, the ability to erase what he did or avoid it in a different timeline, as we talked about here.
Right.
And I guess my last question on that front, too, and I loved it, so I'm not mad. I'm just asking. My last thing is, like, you and I from the very beginning said, I can't remember if we said this on the podcast or this was just on a phone call, but we said, like, I could get totally down with the multiversal stuff if it is a chapter that is opened, we dive into it a little bit for a year, and then is eventually closed, correct?
Sure, correct.
Okay, so here's the two concerns with closing it now. One, it'll be really interesting. Let's say Doctor Strange closes it in a year. Let's just say hypothetically. It'll be fascinating because we may now fall in love with other characters from the other timelines, or fans may get real excited to see another branched reality they bring into the MCU. But if Doctor Strange has to close it, does that not look like Doctor Strange putting it all back to a sacred timeline? Isn't that what we were saying? Like, basically put it all back to one timeline. In which case does that then wipe out these things that we're exploring?
Okay, so one,
do you understand though?
No, I understand what you're saying, but I don't think so. I think that, I mean, who knows how this is all going to play out?
So hold on. Do you think he's going to close it to the degree that we just can't interact with the others, but we know they're out there?
Yes. Yes, that's at least what I'm hoping for. Like, because
am I okay with that? I don't know yet.
I am personally, and part of that is because in some ways, like that's a way that you might, you know, some people just have that view of our world that there are kind of infinite realities based on different choices you've made. But like within the comics world, that's definitely the case. And so I think for me, like, what's so fascinating about that Hickman run that I reference all the time is it's the collision of those things and the ultimate death of all of the possible realities. So when you're asking me that question, I could see two real outcomes. I could see either something happens that, because the TVA isn't there, it leads to another full-out kind of war, which is a really oversimplified way of describing what happens in Hickman's Avengers up to the Secret Wars, and then ends with the destruction of all of the realities except for some kind of holdover. And that would lead, you know, it has to be said, the Russo brothers have kind of famously stated in an interview that they would come back for a Secret Wars film. And I don't know what that means. I think that was mostly a joke. But you have to wonder if that's the new Infinity War that's being built to, in which case it is this kind of hodgepodge of realities, which is what that Secret War comic looks like. It's all realities have been destroyed, and now you have like little bits of things that have clung together into this like weird sort of mutant planet. I could see it being that, where you basically end with all of the realities being destroyed except for our main one. Or I would be equally happy with now all of the realities are intact, but the way to sort of constantly travel between them is no longer either an option or just not something that any of our main characters have any reason to do. I do think I'm with you, though. I think that it should be a chapter, just like the Infinity Saga. Like, the Infinity Saga is having implications, but I don't get any sense that like there's going to be some kind of lingering Thanos, different versions of Thanos in the background forever. And so I want this to end the same way.
I think it's just a fascinating quirk about me. Like I've said this so many times on this podcast. I just love my thing so much. And so I get so weirded out and overly protective when people start messing with my things. And it's so weird.
No, I get
it's
it.
Weird
I get
about
it.
Me. It's so weird about me. And I wish I didn't feel that way. I wish I could move on easier. You got to move on.
You got to move on.
I really do wish I could easier.
But don't you think something about me goes up
like this alarm. Dude, listen to this. I got to just sum this up. I'm so weird. I don't like new things, period, in life. Like when you tell me to watch a movie, it takes 10 people telling me I'm going to love a movie before I check it out because I just don't have interest in diving into it. And I hate that about myself. I hate it. And so whenever something new like this happens, I get so overly sensitive about like, am I ready for new things? And I will be. That's the thing. It's stupid about me bringing it up is I will be. That's why I just have that initial reaction and I got to get over it because it's such a dumb thing.
Got to move
and
on.
There's another timing thing about this that I can't shake. That's so dumb. It's so dumb. And it's not even a thing Marvel has done wrong yet, which is just that like, if Doctor Strange were to close this, that's kind of what I'm pulling for because it makes so much sense that Doctor Strange, Wanda, and Loki, by the way, a dope trio for wizards.
Right.
It would make so much sense for them to close it or to defeat Kang or whatever that looks like, right? But the timing of this is so weird because we know Kang is in Ant-Man 3, and Ant-Man should not be the one to cosmically change this. And I don't think they'll do that. That's why I'm not faulting Marvel. Dude, I'm just in such a weird mood because I loved it so much, the show, and I loved the episode so much. And I told you, I'm not going to bring this up. And yet here I am bringing it up for 20 minutes because I'm just weird with my things, dude.
No, I totally get it. I will say one thing, that was the one project that I hadn't gotten around to yet, talking about things moving forward. But yeah, I mean, the last piece in this puzzle is Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which I thought it was interesting. I think you and I read some of the same articles. Like Waldron has talked about how he's worked pretty closely with Jeff Loveness, he's a fellow Rick and Morty alum. He's also been writing this new Ant-Man film. And that gives me a lot of comfort because one, if people didn't get this enough earlier, I'm a big Jonathan Majors fan. So I think he's going to kill it no matter what. But the fact that there is some kind of synergy there is encouraging to me. And it kind of goes back to something you and I were saying at the very beginning of this season, or not of our season, but of the Loki season, which is Kevin has clearly kind of picked up Waldron as someone that he enjoys because he's taken him over to Doctor Strange. And I would imagine probably to Loki season 2 and maybe beyond. And that to me is great news for two reasons. One, because I'm clearly a huge fan of the way that Waldron writes things, and I think you are too. But two, because that's bringing us to the closest thing that I think we might have right now to a Marcus and McFeely kind of holistic vision, where like I'm not trying to deify those guys, but I really like the kind of connective tissue that they created between all the movies that they worked on. And I truly think that the success that was Endgame relied not just on the way that they wrote Infinity War and Endgame, but on the seeds that they had planted kind of all the way through. And so as we're standing here kind of on the brink of a new era, in the same way that we kind of looked at phase one, I am really encouraged that we have someone that is clearly so talented and so imaginative and so willing to really immerse himself in the Marvel project. Like he's not someone that's just coming in that wants to write his fun thing and peace out. Or at least he's not being allowed to because he's being hired for this other stuff. So I hear you when you're talking about Ant-Man because I don't think that that's where this whole thing should be resolved. You and I were talking about earlier whether that it's going to end up looking like a more traditional version of the King the Conqueror character from Marvel winding up where he's not necessarily some sort of ultimate time lord, but more just like a time themed villain. And it'll be curious to see if that's where we land. But either way, I think the reason that I'm ultimately not super nervous is because I think that I just legitimately have a lot of faith in the creators that we're looking at here. Like, because you have to remember, like, we're looking at, okay, we know now sort of what Waldron has going, and I think it's fair to be excited about Sam Raimi returning to Doctor Strange. Prior to that, we have No Way Home with John Watts, who has kind of consistently knocked it out of the park dealing with this multiverse stuff. And then sort of also in that realm, we have Taika Waititi dealing with Love and Thunder, and who knows if that's going to deal with any of that at all. But, like, I think in terms of what we know now is dealing with the multiverse, and I'm leaving out Shang-Chi and Eternals to the extent that we don't know that those are tied in. Like, I just think that we have a little arc building with creators that I trust a ton. And so this could totally change, you know, in 6 months' time, and I could be back saying that I should have been more nervous than I was. But right now, I think it's kind of pure excitement for me.
Couple other notes on the plot. I do love that they're taking a big swing to make this new phase different. You know, this definitely feels like a phase four kickoff, kind of, finally now.
Right.
Versus an Infinity Saga reflection. It will be fun to see where this goes. And it is a different kind of vehicle for them to tell stories in. So that's kind of fun. Secondly, you know, there's this rumor going out there that what if right when Wanda hears her kids in the post-credit scene is because that's happening right when this was opened up. And now that the multiverse is open, maybe that's how
fun.
She can hear her kids.
That's fun.
Which I think is actually very possible, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And I kind of love that. Thirdly, all the memes are just raging on the internet for Doctor Strange, which makes me so happy because just like with WandaVision, she goes through all of that. And what did Doctor Strange tell Tony? I'm here to protect your reality. And yet it's like when WandaVision's doing this, he's sleeping on the job. He's just like out like on the beach drinking Coke, not actually helping. And now on this, there's all these funny memes of like Doctor Strange when he sees what happens with Loki. And it's like, you son of a beep. It's like, what was he doing during all of this? Protecting your reality. You're doing a pretty bad job of it. this is going to be as impactful going forward as anything we've had. You know, I think I'm going to need some more time to reflect on it.
For sure.
Because I'm sure there's so many things we've missed on what this could mean for upcoming projects, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and then lastly, really quickly, I thought it was interesting that on my second watch, I kind of noticed that it seems like Miss Minutes was the vehicle for Kang, or Immortus, or whatever you want to call him, He Who Remains, to communicate with Renslayer. Is that right?
I think
because,
that's
like,
right.
We finally got to see a clip where she says, this is what he wants you to see. And I wonder, do they already have some kind of connection? And did he intentionally feed her those coordinates or something?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
You know, like, meet me here. Or here's where you need to go to learn more. Maybe it's because she's been such a faithful servant, you know, all these years.
Yeah.
So there's something there too. But
that was a version of him that's dead now. So who did she go to meet?
Right. And now what does the other Kang look like when they show up? What does that even mean? If there's a million Kang variants, you know, like,
yeah.
Which one wins the multiversal war again? Which Kang? Or like, how do you take out a Kang that's got a million Kangs that are aware of it? I'm not being funny.
No, it's a fair point.
It's going to get wild.
It's comical how many questions are left, but they all excite me, and that's what's fun about it. Like there's a world in which I was left feeling like, all right, well, there are questions, but I'm not particularly interested in any of the answers.
Right.
And I love how much that's not the case.
I am so excited about it too. Do you hear me saying that? Does our audience hear me saying that? I'm not kidding. If you couldn't tell, I was so pumped. Like
I was just
like laser focused into the episode. Like I haven't been the entire show so far. So I loved it. And I am excited to see what they do. I'm serious, guys. Okay. I really am. Okay, important housekeeping stuff. Don't turn this off. Robbie and I, for the next few weeks, for sure all of August, are going back to Monday episodes, okay? It'll be so much more beneficial during What If to have a Monday episode. So what that means is we aren't going to have an episode all of next week, barring something crazy, okay? That's for a lot of reasons. It gives Robbie and I some time to plan and to really make our episodes when we come back spectacular, but also...
And to sleep.
And to sleep. But also we feel like we just recorded so much dope content. So please go back and listen to that. This gives you some time to catch up. We know from a lot of our listeners that some people are behind. So catch up on those interviews. Catch up on some of those other episodes. If you're going through Loki for the first time, use our episodes as your guide. We would really appreciate right. that. I think you will enjoy it and it will enhance your viewing of it.
We've said this, but we had so much fun with those interviews. And the more that folks get to listen to those, the easier it is for us to make more of those happen in the future. So if you haven't, I know sometimes people just kind of want to go to the more content-driven thing. One, like, if you enjoyed this episode, you are for sure going to want to hear from all three Loki creators that we spoke to. I don't think that that's an exaggeration. And two, it would just help us out a lot in terms of bringing you more interesting stuff in the future. So please do go get caught up on those because we think that you'll be really glad that you did.
So Monday, July 26th is when we'll be back. At some point during this break, we need to still get our wives' reaction to Black Widow because we promised that,
true.
Barring the sickness that happened.
I know.
We also obviously need to come back to Loki once I've gotten a chance to watch all six episodes, like I said I wanted right. to do, and kind of like reflect on that and review that. But then it's not that long. August 11 now kicks off What If. So for sure by August 16, we're going to be talking What If every week. And then we still hope to mix in those interviews and other content in those episodes. So for a little stretch here, we're going to be on Mondays and it's going to be awesome. And then Shang-Chi comes out September 3, which, like you said, we don't know how that fits into all this. Like, right. could Shang-Chi even be in a different universe? We don't know that now. Like, my wife brought that up. Like, what if Wong is a different multiverse? And what if Wong is bad in this one? That's why he's cage fighting Abomination. We don't know is my point.
I think he's cage fighting Abomination to get the Ten Rings so that he can preserve them as a responsible steward of magical relics. But
okay, going on the record, really calling a shot. Hey, 100% of shots not taken don't go in. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. So then once Shang-Chi's up, we're going to have What If, we're going to be double dipping again. What If Shang-Chi, and then guys, this is obviously building up towards Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. Like, this is going to get crazy. So, holy cow. We have just put out hours worth of content the last few weeks. Catch up on that. Thank you so much, guys. If you can't tell, we love doing this. So, we really appreciate the community that's being formed here. And so, let's stay in touch. Let's hear all your theories. You can join our Slack in the show notes. I'm still getting messages about how to join. If you can't find the show notes, still message us. I'll send you the link. It's not hard. And even if you're not a part of the Slack or you don't have time for it, follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast or email us, theffwpodcast.com. This has been amazing. I can't wait to see where it goes, Robbie. And we will see you next time on Friends from Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.